Hey friend, I'm Robin May, and a few of the professional hats that I wear includes being a transformational speaker, a life coach, and a licensed therapist. And personally, well, I'm a wife, a mommy to three girls, and a pastor's wife, just to name a few. Girl, I'm over here doing all the things while trying to stay in shape and keep my skin clear. But the truth is, I don't want to be known for being busy. I think that's a scheme that somebody set up. No, I want to be known for living a life that is in perfect alignment with what God intended. And I want to help you do the same. So it's with that in mind, I'd like to welcome you right here to Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. Over here, we're creating a safe space to have real conversations with real women on real topics. This is a judgment-free zone where we can be vulnerable and honest and curious about our lives so that we can elevate not just what we do, but who we are. So if any of that resonates with you, again, welcome to our safe space. This is Intentional Conversations with Robin May and friends. So this is my second guest, who is a second time guest. This is my girl, Tori. You all have been DMing me about her back when we initially launched the podcast. She was one of my first guest. I think I know my best friend was on, and then I think it was you. I think that's how it was. Yeah. And they were super excited and learned so much from you. I got so many DMs from our conversation. Oh, cool. So my girl is back. Dr. Tori is in the building. Hey, friend.
Hey, friend.
I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation with you. I was telling my last guest, you know, the podcast is Intentional Conversations with Robin May and Friends, right? And all of the podcast episodes so far have actually been my actual girlfriends, right? People who are my real friends. I just, Tori, let me slow down and tell you this. So my series that I just finished was on finances, right? It was minding your money. And if I could turn my screen around, you would be able to see this big white sheet of paper that has all these guests that I want for my podcast. Mm-hmm. And I had your name on two different sections. One, really three. Let me tell you the three sections. Mm-hmm. One was on the money conversation, because I know you do a lot around psychology and money.
Right.
And on mental health awareness. And then I'm doing a series on marriage. So I decided, let me bring my girl on for Mental Health Awareness Month, but you are a wealth of knowledge.
Oh, thank you.
I am super excited to have you here. So we are getting in, like I said in the introduction, everybody, we are getting into your mental health or Mental Health Awareness Month. If you are listening to this real time, you know that this is Mental Health Awareness Month. But if you happen to be coming to the podcast well after May, that is okay, because you can still get a wealth of information from our conversation. So Dr. Tori, I want to jump in right away, because you are a clinical psychologist. Am I making that up?
I am what's called a psychological, no, I'm sorry, God, I'm getting my own stuff messed up. I am not a clinical psychologist.
Titles.
I am a counseling psychologist.
Okay, a counseling psychologist. Okay, yeah. So educate the audience, because you and I both know people are always texting us or DMing us and asking us, what's the difference between a psychiatrist and a psychologist and a mental health therapist? You are a PhD level therapist. Is that how you would define it?
Yeah. So basically, like, a clinical psychologist does testing. So they do all the testing, and they're like that one step, in my opinion, under a psychiatrist. They just can't prescribe medication, right? But they can do testing, and some of them choose to do counseling as well. But mainly, they are doing things from a much more calculated research, clinical perspective.
Absolutely.
A counseling psychologist, such as myself, I have my master's in professional counseling, and then I have my PhD in behavioral psychology. So basically, I'm a little bit more informed when it comes to the clinical aspects of counseling and whatnot. I have no interest in testing. And I also didn't want to do testing, because testing basically, for the most part, not all the time, because you do some testing with forensics, but testing is basically with children, and I don't see children.
Absolutely.
That's not my area.
One of my line sisters, Dr. Melanie Hill, is a clinical psychologist, and I used to work for her. She actually, Tori, what was so interesting, she was one of my professors in college, which is so crazy. If you could imagine, she's my line sister, honey. And I'm having to say, excuse me, Dr. Melanie. So she was my professor, but she also, I worked for her and she did testing. And what was so crazy, she was the psychologist, but she trained me to administer the test as a therapist. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to kind of first start by asking you for the audience, and so many of my, you know, you don't have to, you can't disclose information, but I'm going to say it. Have my friend circle go, promise you. Sorry.
Robin, people sometimes like, woo, because when like they all like post stuff and I know they're connected, and I'm like,
Tori, between you and my girl, Dr. LaToya Williams, I promise you, all my friends, when I tell you, because when people ask me, who do I refer to?
Yeah.
It's y'all. And so when I'm looking, I'm like, girl, you have half a Clark Atlanta, half of my sisters.
And I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah, but I love it because I know I can trust you. Girl, Tori, I haven't even told you this. My friends be texting me like, she has completely snatched my edges. She got me completely together. She gave me the business. And I tell them, this is what I tell people. If you're looking for somebody that's going to give it to you straight like you believe I do, that's my girl.
And that's the same thing I have said when I refer mine to you. Like, Robin is going to hit you from the hip just like I do. She's not gonna, you know, tarry around it and play with it. She's going to tell you what you need to know.
What you need to hear. Okay, so but tell the audience what got you into the field. You said you knew you didn't want to work with children. Talk to us a little bit how you even came into the clinical field.
Well, you know, so I believe, and I think you do too, that this is a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as far as I can remember being a kid, I was that kid that people came and told me their secrets or came and asked me for advice. But it wasn't until I was I was probably, and I think I've shared this story with you before, I was watching a movie at 10 and it was a psychiatrist. And I love psychological thrillers. I love
me
them.
Me too, girl. Like
I love
a sis, girl.
I love them. And so I was watching it and I got caught up in the chemistry and the flow of that therapeutic session that was shown between at the time the movie was Dressed to Kill, and it was Michael Caine and Angie Dickinson. I'm dating myself every time. And I got like enthralled. I was like, and I think now looking back, because it was so intimate, right?
Yes.
And I just, and I ain't gonna lie, still to this day, even when I am reaching sometimes burnout, which is a whole nother conversation.
Yes.
There's certain sessions I have, I'm just like, I was made for this. Like,
Tori, see, this is why you are my, it never fails when we, y'all, when we're having conversations, if we're in person, we high-fiving each other. Listen, because Tori, when you talk about burnout, you already know where I am with that. But there are, I feel that same thing. There are certain, and you know what I do, girl, after those sessions, I take a note, because what it means is whatever that issue was, or whatever, or however that client is showing up, it speaks to what I am specifically called to, right? So I try to take a note of that, because we're not called to all the issues, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But it lets me know, wait a minute, this is my thing. So I know exactly what you're talking about. You're like, maybe I was created
for this.
There's
two things in life. Well, three things, to be honest. Three things in life I know I was supposed to be. A Black woman, a mother, a therapist. God, yes. I mean, child of God is automatically there.
That's a given.
That's a given, but God created me for those three things, because there's, you know, I talk to some women as clients that are parents, and they talk about certain things that they're struggling with, and my heart goes out to them, because there's a lot of stuff that some mothers go through. I'm like, I ain't go through that, because this was something that just so naturally is a part of my DNA.
Yes.
It wasn't hard for me to balance work and kids. Don't get me wrong. Actual labor, yes, but the heartstrings, always first. I never have to feel like, ooh, I shouldn't. So I knew I was built to be a therapist.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Okay. So that's how you kind of began to pursue the field. I remember you told me you were, oh, am I making this up? Didn't you tell me you were a waitress at one point?
Oh, honey, when I was in school, so I have been a hairdresser. I was a waitress. I was a hairdresser. I was a waitress. I was a bartender. Then I was a public health consultant for a
Mm.
consulting firm here in Atlanta for a while. And then I went into working in like community health and then eventually like private practice.
Okay, so I was about to go somewhere else with my next question, but you said something that I want to pivot to. You talked about the fact that you know that there is a synergy with certain clients that you're like, yes, I know this, I'm made for this. Remember, I then said that we know that there are certain areas that we are not necessarily called to or equipped for. How do you determine that, or how do you communicate that? So I'll give you an opportunity because I didn't tell you this question. I'll give you an opportunity to think about that. What I do for those who are listening, every therapist that you are seeing, you want to make sure that that therapist is trained or equipped to handle whatever issue you're bringing to the table. Well, I remember back in the day when I was in school, one of the questions was, what is an issue that you just know you need to
Me too.
avoid?
Yeah, I went
You
through
remember
that.
that
Yeah.
question? So now what I do to try to navigate my client base or my caseload, I am very, very, very concerned or cautious about abandoning a client, right? And so, in other words, bringing the client on and then not being able to see them. So I do consultations, Tori. Now, I don't know if I'm gonna keep doing them, but I do free 15-minute consultations before I bring a client on to find out why are you seeking therapy? Because I need to make sure that whatever you're bringing to the table, I'm equipped for. So I'm gonna give you an example. I cannot help with eating disorders. Now, I can help you with what may be triggering your eating disorder. I don't have the skill set to help someone navigate extreme eating disorder. So if a client comes and says, this is what her focus is, I'm going to refer her out. So is there an area that you refer people out that you know is not your area other than kids?
So here's the thing. So it's funny that you asked that because I had a recent issue where I had this couple and I struggle sometimes based on age range. Okay. So don't get me wrong, I've had couples that were well up into their life, but that's really, I feel inadequate. So a lot of times if they are over 65, I may ask them like, how do you feel about the fact that I am younger? And how do you feel about the fact of me giving you guidance? And also I'm very descriptive in the intro or the consultation with my clients, like, what are you seeking from me? If you just want me to l listen, I can do that with anybody. I can
Do
sit there and just listen.
that all day,
But if you are looking for skills and training and implementation and my advice, then I'm going to ask you some things a little differently based on personality, preference, all of that thing.
yes.
So when they're much older, sometimes that can be, and then of course, much younger, but also I struggled with the thought in school, because when I was in school, especially my master's, my kids were really small with pedophilia. Pedophiles, that was something that I was like, I'm a new mom. I'm extremely protective. How am I going to manage if someone has a sexual dysfunction or a sexual deviance, even though they may not have no legality going on? Let's say they are, I know I have to refer that out. That's hard for me. That's not something that
Yes, absolutely.
that's not something that
Well, I
I'm.
believe that area, first of all, even if we didn't Even if we felt equipped to handle it or had the ability to handle it, that the level of training that's required for that, and I'm saying this and sharing this because I want the listeners, as you're seeking therapy, you have every right to ask
Yes.
questions of your
Investigate.
therapist. Absolutely. Tori, I tell people finding a therapist is like finding a significant relationship, baby. You want to make sure, because it's a very intimate experience. It's interesting you talked about age because I also don't work with young children, but honestly, Tori, I'm very cautious of even working with teenagers. I don't work with teenagers, let me say that, not just cautious, I don't work with teenagers. But when I bring on 19-year-olds or 20-year-olds, 21, I have a hard conversation with them because I am such a process-based therapist, and I am such a, which is going to be my next question to you, I am such a therapist that's going to challenge you to lean into how you're processing, what you're thinking, your personal responsibility. And sometimes that age group isn't quite ready for that level of work. Now, shout out to a couple of my college students. I have about three college students right now because when I had that conversation with them, they were like, no, right. First of all, no, Miss Robin. See, that's the problem right there. They're like, no, Miss Robin. Because see, when you come in these doors, you grown. So they're like, Robin, I can handle it. And they shout out to them. They have been handling it. So I want to ask you, when you think about or when you share what your therapeutic framework is, what would that be? What would you say
So I'm
your framework
eclectic.
is?
Like I do a little bit of psychoanalysis. I do, but mainly because I do love back history. I do love understanding like where this point of origin is, but I mainly do cognitive behavior therapy and mindfulness practices. So I'm usually helping people understand like this is, like you say, this is process oriented. We're gonna start here. We're gonna end up here. That's the goal is to get here. Now, here is predicated on what their goals and objectives, of course, are. But I use heavily like CBT and also mindfulness. But mindfulness, what a lot of people don't understand too, is a form of cognitive behavior therapy. It's an
Absolutely.
adjunct. But I really love the whole premise of let me just sit in this and not be impulsive and be reactionary to what's going on with me. Let me
Yes.
learn to feel and deal with this in real time and then have great coping mechanisms to replace the faulty ones I started out with.
I love this. I wanted you to explain what mindfulness is. And so I love that. One of the things, Tori, again, this is nowhere in the questions that I told you I wanted to ask you, but with that thought, one of the things I have found, and I'm going to do a podcast on this actually, but I believe that women, and particularly Black women, we have a love-hate relationship with the idea of resilience. And I believe it's because we've had to be so resilient. That's kind of where you're finding this soft life movement coming from. I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of being resilient. I'm tired of having to pick myself up. And I understand that. But I also believe there is a need for emotional resilience to be able to feel the feeling and not be consumed with the feeling and not even to quickly run away from the feeling. To your point, let's just sit here for a moment.
Just for a
Tell me your
moment.
thoughts about that.
So I'm gonna be real, real honest with you. I understand the whole concept of the soft movement, but it's really irritating me to an extent.
Like you, my girl. Y'all, if you listen to the podcast, you didn't see me throw my arms back. Tori.
Be real. I just gotta be real because here's the thing. Just like I educate my clients a lot around the word trauma. I'm like, look, everything ain't traumatizing, okay? I just want
Exactly.
y'all to understand there are going to be some things in life that's going to take your breath away. There are going to be some things in life that's going to literally change the molecular structure of your body because it was so painful. I get that. But somebody cussing you out and telling you that you, that ain't traumatic. I'm sorry. Okay. But anyway, so
Yeah,
that's
we're gonna
kind
come
of.
back to that. Go ahead.
But the whole thing about being emotionally resilient, I feel as a therapist and as a woman and as an older woman now that it is my job to help the millennials and Generation Z understand, don't let this societal trend declaw you. We're supposed to have our claws. Now, what do I mean by that? Claws. That when the rubber hits the road and it gets hard out there, you need to know that you know, okay, this is hard, but I can emotionally withstand this.
Yes, I can handle hard things.
I can
I can
handle
deal. Yes.
I can,
Yes.
girl, I got a client who sees an executive coach. And we got to talking one day, and I told her, I said, I'm gonna steal that from your coach because that was good. The coach shared with her, I have the capacity for uncertainty.
Tori, was I her coach? Because Tori, I have to look up in my note. I am getting ready to launch this program, and I keep notes in my phone for the program. And one of the notes is that if we cannot build our tolerance for uncertainty, we will stay on an emotional roller
Roller
coaster.
coaster.
Oh my God, I love this. I love this. Okay. And so when you're thinking about this, how do you then, though, navigate it with the fact that, yes, women, particularly Black women, have felt like, but I've been fighting all my life. I had to fight. I've been fighting all my life, and I'm tired. I have my thoughts about it because I think it's really rooted in the poor boundaries. You haven't had
Yes.
boundaries, so you've
Yes.
been used and abused. So build your boundaries up. But what are your thoughts
Boundaries.
about it?
I totally agree. I totally, totally second and third and fourth that, because here's the thing. All right. So we went through the era of being superwoman and having the S on our chest and I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. And I can show up and I can show up. And now we're at burnout. That's all this is. That's all this is. This is the flip side of I can do it. I can do it. So the I can do it. I can do it, in my opinion, from a clinical standpoint, has a lot to do with codependent nature, because a lot of women are codependent, okay?
Define codependency. Don't go
so
too fast.
Codependency is when you are validated from external factors, meaning I have an identity, but my identity is comprised in you saying I'm okay, you saying I'm beautiful, you saying I'm smart,
yes,
you saying I deserve, rather than me owning it myself and realizing, wait a minute, I got to validate me. I can't validate myself through how well I perform in your life.
Absolutely.
Right.
I don't want y'all to jump over that. She said, I cannot validate myself through how well you say I perform in your life. I love that. So you said it's a flip side because of codependency and.
And like you said, just not having boundaries, which is still a form of codependency. And this word I have been standing on, I have been using the bejesus out this word since the first of the year, is normalization. You have been modeled and normalized. This is what a woman's supposed to do. Now, let's get clear about normalization, because people think normalization means good, productive, healthy. No, normalization means this is what I'm familiar with. This is what's been modeled to me, good, bad, or indifferent. And because I have either mastered it or I understand it, I feel safe in it. That's all it is. That's all it is.
Girl, you're teaching. So just because it has been normalized in your life or your family's journey, you believe it is what it's supposed to be.
Yes, you receive it and you take it on. Do you know how many clients? I know, because your clients are very similar in demographic as mine. Do you know how many African-American, Black women, whatever you want to call ourselves, sit in front of me and say, well, I saw my mama do this, and I saw my mama do that, and I'm trying to be the mother that my mama was. And then, yeah, but your mama was miserable.
Your mama comes and sees me. Your mama comes and sees me. Do you hear me?
You.
And helping, y'all are literally seeing a real conversation between two therapists who've been in the game for a long time. Tori, what I tell people often, that helping, now this is what I really say, particularly Christian women, but helping them unpack what you're using the word as normalization, stolen, but helping them unpack what they have identified as normal is so hard, because what ends up happening is they have to begin to look at mama them through a critical lens. And that is difficult, particularly when they've elevated mom and them in a certain place. And I get it. I don't play about my mama. I don't play about my grandmother. And so someone suggesting that maybe that wasn't quite the right way, or not even, so I wouldn't even say right or wrong. All I'm doing is showing it to you and asking you, is this working for you?
It's working for you. And then the other thing too, and I know you get this too, because of where you are again in life, you know, within your spiritual walk. Is this a generational curse we're looking at?
Ma'am.
Are we looking at something that, okay, my mama didn't have great boundaries. My mama had low self-esteem. My grandmother didn't have great boundaries. My grandmother had low self-esteem. Okay, so what did I notice? It's such a, like, behaviors have patterns. And
They
so when
have
you
so
look at
many
the
patterns.
patterns, you're gonna see the story.
Tori, girl, it blows me away when we talk about patterns. This is why y'all hear me preaching, pause and pay attention, pause and pay attention, because you got to look at not only your story, but your mama's story and your grandmother's
Stories
story.
around
Because
you.
it blows me. Talk about being excited and what realizing that you're doing the work you're supposed to be doing. When I am talking to a client, this happened recently. I was talking to one of my clients. Girl, she listens to the podcast. I was talking to one of my clients, and because we don't play about confidentiality. So I'm
Yes.
trying to make sure I'm presenting this in a way. So
Right.
I was talking to her, and we were unpacking her story. I do this thing called discovery with the client. So if it was you, the discovery of Tori. And what we're doing is we could have been working together for a year, Tori.
Yeah.
We'll come to a sticking place, or we'll come to a place we can't move past. And I'll say, you know what? Let's do a discovery journey. And what we do is I pretend that you're a brand new client. And let's just start from the beginning. Tell me your story. And I just started taking notes. Tell me, okay, tell me who, where was your mom and daddy? Where, how did they get together? Then once you were born, what happened? And who was, so we started going through a discovery. So she and I were going on the discovery journey. And so much of the patterns that we just, now mind you, I have been working with her for a long time. But the patterns that we saw that showed up between her and her child were eerily similar, like some specific things to what happened to her. That this girl is the bomb. Like so many of my clients, if they weren't my clients, we would be friends,
Yeah,
okay?
me
Because
too. Me
that
too.
just brings these people in my life. So this girl would be my girl. We'd be kicking it. She's the bomb, but she's had some tough challenges. And so, because she's the bomb, because she's making so many leaps and bounds in her life, she had never explored her story in that way. So, to your very point, the patterns begin to show up because it is a generational reality. And your mama, I always tell people, your mama wants you to do better than her.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, not it now.
That's a whole nother conversation. But hopefully, because okay, similar to your discovery, what I do is I do something called know your story so that you understand your patterns so that you can make better decisions.
Okay, friend, I had to interrupt the episode just to remind you. And I know I have been talking about bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women for a minute, but we are so close to getting ready to launch. I have done a focus group asking women their opinion about how we should make this program work. I am finalizing a few more details. I want to make it super easy for you to access and for you to dive in. Bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women is for the woman just like you who wants some insight, some ahas about her own life and her own journey, but she is juggling so many things. She just does not have time right now to really set apart a long amount of time to get the help she needs. And that is where bite-sized breakthroughs for busy women comes in. So head over to robinmayonline.com/breakthrough so that you can be one of the first people to sign up. It's coming soon, girl. Go to the site now.
So I'm
Yes.
like, you're not gonna be able to shift that normalization until you understand. Oh, I did this because this made me feel safe. Oh, I did this because this was familiar. This was known. Oh, I did this because I'm always seeking validation or approval from others. So now that I understand that this is my go-to, this is my MO, my
Yes.
modus operandi. Once I understand that, then I can see the patterns. Then I can actually identify when I'm doing it now.
And decide, watch this, y'all. So
How
if
to
you
do
listen to this,
differently.
and decide in that moment if you want to do something different. Listen, the beautiful thing about therapy is that we're not here to cause you to change your life. You don't have to do anything different. You can keep doing what you've been doing, but we want to shine a light so that you can then make a conscious decision if I want to continue this.
Yes.
So one of my favorite books is called How to Do the Work. Have you read that? Tori, you would love it. You would love it. It's called How to Do the Work. Now, again, with any book, you want to take the meat and throw away the bones.
Right.
But in the one of the stories this particular author was sharing, she was talking about how she got in her feelings about something, Tori. A situation occurred and she got in her feelings and she was hanging out with one of her friends. And her friend was like, come on, let's just go to the beach. Let's go chill. Let's go to the beach. And she said, she was like, no, I don't want to go to the beach. So her friend got up and went on to the beach. And she said she got so much in her feelings, like, how could she abandon me? How could she leave me like that? Why? She knew I was in a space, but it was such a powerful example of that friend having clear boundaries. It was such a powerful example because the friend said, come on. And let me just add this caveat because this is important. There was an event going on at the beach that they were supposed to be attending. And so the friend was like, come on, let's go. But she got in her feelings because she wanted her friend to accommodate her in that moment. And the friend had clear boundaries. And so that takes me to this question or this idea that I often say, and I want to know your feedback, even if you don't agree with me. I get a lot of pushback from my clients. They don't love it because I tell them often that your response to a trigger has little to do with that person, but everything to do with you.
So good.
Tell me your thoughts about
it. I totally agree. It's funny. Like I said, it's like we like mirror each other. I have been working on my I'm doing a series right now on YouTube about relationships and just trying to get people to understand kind of the flow, how it starts, how we break it, how communication breaks. And one of the things I recently spoke on was knowing why you respond the way you do to your trauma, like knowing your trauma responses and how that impacts the relationship. Most of us, again, because we have normalized a certain way to respond to a trigger, we don't take the time to even understand, is this a good response to this trigger?
Yes.
That's because we haven't unpacked the trauma.
Absolutely.
So if we can fully unpack the trauma and understand, oh, this is a knee-jerk response. This is my body automatically telling me, hey, this happened before to us. We don't want this to happen again. So, bam, that's why I slam a door when I don't get my need met. Or that's why I jump in the car and pull off crazy when somebody has hurt my feelings, because I've learned to flee. I've learned to deflect rather than saying, wait a minute, this is uncomfortable. Let me do some investigation as to why it's uncomfortable. And if this person even meant to do this,
they even meant it. And that's so powerful. And I get so excited. We get so excited. It's like, you know, this is what we're supposed to do. Because it's so freeing. There's so much freedom when you begin to realize, wait a minute, I don't have to respond in that way. I don't have to react in that way. I have some control over my reaction.
I have a choice.
I have a choice. Now, I want to say this to the listener. Tori just said something and I want to highlight it. You talked about your physiological response, your physical response, because when we say you have a choice, we don't want you to confuse it with saying you are causing yourself to feel a certain way. Like when your heart starts beating fast or your stomach starts to get in knots or you begin to have that pain, it shows up for me in my left shoulder. It's not like you're saying, hello, left shoulder, start hurting. It is not as obvious as that, but it is that your body has learned to react. Pay attention. So now what I do when I'm starting to feel that in my left shoulder, I'm like, wait a minute, wait.
What's going on?
Something's going on. Wait, wait, wait. Something just, wait, what just happened? Why is this stress coming up for me? I'm learning to pay attention to that. What do you think about that?
So I totally, again, I agree. I believe in mind-body connection. I believe that the body, the brain is so sophisticated, right? So we go through something traumatic, especially when we're little people, when we're small, and the brain goes, ooh, this is just way too much. Let me shut this down. And it stores it someplace. Now, it stores it there until the brain matures and says, Oh, I can scan my environment and myself now, and I feel comfortable. I feel safe, or I go through something else traumatic, and the brain goes, this is too much. Let me throw this all up. But either way, we get to a place where transition occurs, and the mind body goes, it's time to deal with this now, right? So, how does the body show? So, you said your shoulder, the trauma that I went through from my parents divorcing to my own abusive first marriage, my body immediately shows me in dreams. And I will dream a certain particular dream 3 nights in a row. The second night when it comes up, I go, what's going on? What's stressing me? Right? That third night when it hits, I'm like, okay, this is really something wrong. Like, I'm really upset about something. And then I sit down and I sit in it with myself. I'm like, what has happened in the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month that's got me feeling threatened? That's got me
Oh.
feeling like somebody's at me, right? And then once I figure that out, I'm fine. So, yes, like
Absolutely.
trauma hides in the body from a perspective of not, oh, I'm trying to hurt you. It's I'm trying to alert you.
I love, okay, I have a few more questions and then I know we have to wrap, but this conversation is so good. One of the things I want to highlight when you talked about it storing, the trauma gets stored, right? Because our brain, like you said, protects us. That's why a lot of things rest in our subconscious, because we can get flooded with too much. And so the brain can protect us. But this is, y'all have heard me talk about this before. What also happens though, it's stored, but you have your logical brain and your feeling brain. And something can occur that seems familiar. It's not even the same thing. It just seems familiar to what happened back then. And you react to that person, to that situation, as if it's that back there. So you're wondering why your relationship's frayed. You're wondering why you can't have a real connection. You're wondering why you often feel lonely in a crowded room. It could be that you've responded to things in a certain way because of your past, and it wasn't the same thing. It just felt familiar. How I like to describe this, I've told people, I'm sorry, I'm terrified of dogs. I have no interest in getting over the terror. Do you remember it packed? If you were there then, you know they used to bring that dog up there. Do you remember that? Tori, they still.
Angelina and them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Angelina would be bringing her dog up there. One day, that dog was walking freely down the hallway. I acted such a fool, Tori. My client, we got back in the room, and my client was like, "You need a therapist." So clearly, I ain't trying to get over it. But watch this. I run every other morning, and y'all have heard me talk about this. I can see a ball running down, rolling down the street. And if my brain doesn't register quickly that it's a ball, my heart starts beating fast. I get very anxious. I get tense because I am scanning my environment at all times. Watch this, y'all. This can change your life. I'm scanning my environment at all times for a dog because it's a threat. Now, I'm doing it about a dog. What are y'all doing it about? Who trying to comfort your man? Who trying to get over on you? Who trying to take advantage of you?
Oh,
Who trying to belittle
let's make it
you?
even more personal. You got some people who may have been obese and they lost the weight. And the minute the weight starts to show back up, they freak out because they don't want to go back to the abuse that they witnessed and felt and experienced from being an obese person. Like it is, let me tell you something. The mind is the bomb, the way that it wants to warn us and alert us, and we run from it, especially people of color, because we're told don't feel.
Don't
Don't feel,
feel, ignore,
ignore.
stuff it, stuff it. Okay. All right. So this conversation is so good. There's one other thing I want to ask you before I go into these final two questions. Just still on this conversation, because again, I want us to really learn to take personal responsibility. Now, I live on this mantra of personal responsibility. So I feel it necessary right now to say this. I know that I live on that mantra. I know you guys who listen to the podcast all the time hear this. I want to make sure that I do validate your experiences, though. People have done you wrong. There have been some people who have done you wrong, who have abandoned you, who
Yes.
have, some of you have been definitely abused. And so when I talk about personal responsibility, Tori, the reason why I live on this pulpit of personal responsibility and personal healing and doing your own work is because if you are, God forbid, I plead the blood of Jesus over all of us, but if a sniper shoots you and you're on the ground bleeding, if you're waiting for the sniper to come back and put a bandage on you, it's not going to happen.
To say
So
it.
you can sit there and bleed out, waiting for the sniper to come back and tend to you. The sniper is not coming back. And so what are you going to do? You didn't do it to yourself. Maybe you didn't. I don't know your story, but maybe you didn't do it to yourself, but it's going to be up to you to do your own work so that you can be healed. But so with that, I had to make sure I say that because I never want people to feel invalidated,
Right,
but I want them
right,
to feel empowered
right,
to
right.
take care of themselves. And so when you think about that, and we talk about how triggers really are your own responsibility to process, how do you then help clients who really do live in that victim mentality? Like, how do you support them in helping them move out of that framework?
So I have a client that I have been working with probably 8 years. And at one point, she's got some serious diagnosis. She was raped very young and then took on a lot of personal shame and responsibility for the adult, for the perpetrator, not realizing, no, you're not at fault at all. But in working with her, there were many times when she avoided at all costs the work. And because of her fragility and her other diagnosis, I decided, okay, I'm gonna show up and just listen for a while. And listening for a while was probably 3 years. Okay.
Tori, I could pass out. Baby,
But
that takes grace.
here's the thing. So you can't do that with everybody, but there are some people I really believe, again, like I said, I'm called, that the Lord put something on my heart, like, nope, you got to wait this one out. So not too long ago, I started working with another client who had been molested. And through her journey, I learned how to better address the other client. Because there was a book that came into play between my researching for the newer client. And I said, this is going to work for her. So I strategized and did a different form of treatment with her. And she told me, she said, I can't believe how patient you've been with me. Now, can I do that with everybody? There's some people, I don't know why. There's some people I've said, I can't help you. I need to refer you out. Like, you will not take my guidance. You will not take my suggestion. You won't do your homework. You come in session and then fall out of session. You are showing me you're not ready to do the work. And so that's okay. But I
That's
can't
okay.
continue this journey with you because I feel like I'm failing you, right? But then this particular woman I'm talking about, the therapeutic alliance was so on point, and I knew, I was like, because of her other diagnosis that she has, I'm like, she can't hear me yet, right? So I was just patient. But I do have those hard conversations with clients like, look, we've been doing this for 3 years. You haven't moved. I need to, and I've had clients tell me, I don't want anybody else. I want to stay with you. And then I have to decide, okay, what's that gonna look like?
I be telling my clients, okay, then, well, then let's. But you know, I love that. I love the beauty of that. That's the power of the therapeutic relationship. And I do believe that God gave you a supernatural grace in that with that particular client. And I absolutely, it really gives me chills. And you know, shout out to Christina, our former colleague.
She doing?
You know, I haven't talked to her. I mean, I'm gonna text her after this. But you know, Christina, I don't know if you remember, she was my supervisor back in the day
Yeah,
before we came to Pact Atlanta.
right.
And Tori, she told me this one time, and it impacted me so deeply with a client because I am so solution focused. And
Right.
I am so moving you from where you are, helping you to move, because I realize I'm not moving nobody, but
Right.
helping you move from where you are to where you need to be.
Right.
Therapy, being a therapist and even being in my own therapy has helped me understand the rhythm and being okay with that rhythm. But Christina said this one time. I was talking to her about my frustrations with a particular client and some of the behaviors of this particular client. And she said, "You are rushing this client to a place that you are not going to be able to help her navigate because she's not ready to get over there, and neither are you." Girl, and when I tell you that,
That's
2 years ago, she said that. And I was like, okay.
good.
And so it has helped me deal with that. Now, if you're working with me and you are operating with a victim mentality, I'm going to tell you that. Now, I'm going to
Yes.
say, now listen, it's okay if that's where you want to be, but I'm going to hold up the mirror so that you can see that that's what's happening. Okay, before we go, I would be remiss not to talk a little bit specifically with you about depression and then anxiety, because anxiety is your jam. But I want to, and then I want you to tell us about your cards.
Okay, cool.
So, talk to us a little bit about navigating depression with, again, I keep mentioning women because that's primarily the audience for the podcast. How do you help people navigate the weight of depression, particularly, Tori, when they don't want to take medication? Let's normalize this a little bit for them, the realities of depression and kind of how you help them navigate.
So the first thing I do, this is something that I didn't start in the beginning, but as I worked, I realized like I've been working with people long enough that I can see their patterns. Do they see it? So the first thing I get them to do, if they don't want to do nothing else, I'm like, can you please at least just journal to me how you're feeling so that we can start to chart and understand, is this seasonal affective, or is this only coming in the cold months? When it gets warm outside and the sun shines, are you automatically kind of coming out of your shell? Or is this something that's so deep and so heavy on you that we know there's no way around this without medication? And there's no way around this without us having a very strategic format that you need to commit to every day, right? Because the thing about depression is, depression talks to you in such a way, and I talk about the personality of depression. Because see, people really think it's just me, it's just me. No, your mind is under a chemical imbalance that is causing you to not be motivated, to be afraid, to not want to leave your house, to not want to bathe. We got to get you to understand that part so that you can take responsibility for what you can do. So there's
What
supplements that I
absolutely.
talk to, you know that I'm big on supplements. Okay, you don't want to do meds yet? Let's try this. I purposely try a holistic approach with them, from supplements to exercise to a sleep routine at night. I try to get them to commit to all of that just so that they can see how bad it is.
Absolutely,
Oh, did you do
absolutely.
this? Did you not? And I ain't gonna lie, I can be kind of a drill sergeant when it comes to depression because I've had it before myself. And I tell them, this is no different than that woman that says, I want to lose 30 pounds, but she won't make any changes in her behavior to do it. You're not going to lose weight if you continue to take in calories and not burn them. That's just
Absolutely, it's not going to
science.
happen. Now, I love that you're saying that because I think in our attempts to normalize or not normalize, to help women understand that they're not doing it to themselves when it comes to depression, that we are taking away the responsibility that the
Yes.
person has to do something. Even therapy is a something now. Let us say that going
Yes,
to therapy is a
that's the
something.
beginning.
Yes. And then even if we identify, kind of what I tell people is identify the things. The description I give is to imagine that you're in a hot water balloon and we want to lift up off the ground out of the depression. A hot water balloon is just one big balloon. But instead of one big balloon, let's identify five balloons that are going to help you come up. And with that visualization, you need all five to lift. And if you take one away, it's going to lower how high
I
you
love
go.
that.
And so I love that you talk about exercise. You are the queen of supplements, honey. You have exposed me to supplements, and helping my clients with that. So I love that. Now let's kind of transition. In your words, communicate how you understand the difference between a client suffering from depression versus anxiety, and then how you help them with anxiety.
So the issue with depression is, and I tell this all the time, people who struggle with depression struggle with past decisions, past situations. People that struggle with anxiety struggle with current and future situations. Now, here's the thing. All of it is fear-based. The fear of, I don't want that to happen to me again, or I can't believe I allowed that to happen, or I can't believe this person did this to me. That's where depression mind is, right? But anxiety is, I'm not enough. Somebody gonna sneak me. Somebody's gonna fool me, trick me. I'm gonna get taken advantage of. So the anxious brain is hyperactive. It's always like spinning, 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 never giving the person's brain, body, nothing a chance to rest, right? But the depressed brain goes, it's pointless. Let's just shut off. Now, does the depressed brain think sometimes and go down the rabbit hole? Yes, but it's usually flipped or switched because this is just too much. I've already lost. I'm defeated. Let me throw my hands down. Right? So when I'm working with these clients with these different realities, my thing is always to show them the to me, depression and anxiety live on the same continuum. One is on one side, one is on the other side.
I love
That's why
that.
we medicate a lot of times, and I explain to my clients, okay, your depression is up here, and you're trying to get it balanced. In the trying to get balanced, you may raise anxiety because it's on a straight line. They're on opposite sides of it. One is overprocessing, one is underprocessing. So how do we get balance, right? So we got to figure out, okay, what do I need to do? And some of my clients, girl, I know you've had these clients. I've had clients come in and literally tell me, especially when I was at PAC, Dr. Tori, I hope you can't smell me because I have not bathed in 2 weeks, right? And you know what I tell them?
I can smell you.
No.
Okay.
Tell them the mere fact that you can tell me that means that you can push through it. Because if you couldn't push through it, you wouldn't even got up and come into this
The fact,
office.
but also I was gonna say the
Evening.
fact that they're there,
The fact that
like.
you have walked in here with clothes on and telling me that you didn't take enough time to jump in the shower because you didn't want to tells me that you are already processing in a way that you can resolve your situation. Because I know people can't get out of bed.
And that's the truth of the matter. Like when you talk about being on the spectrum or being on a spectrum, one of the things I tell people, and they don't necessarily love it. I talked about this in the previous episode that I believe, Tori, we're all on the what was the word? I think I might use the word spectrum of something,
The range of
right?
something.
The range of something is just when you talk about whether you can be clinically diagnosed. So that's why people sometimes don't understand the difference between I'm just sad and I'm depressed. It's when it begins to interfere with your everyday life that we need to start leaning into it. So, Tori, this conversation has been so amazing. Before we go, I want you to share with them a little bit about your, I wish I had them in front of me. And what I'll do is, like I did last time you were on, I posted them on
Oh, cool.
Instagram.
Appreciate it.
You
Thank you.
created some therapy cards. Talk to me a little bit about those.
So I decided that I wanted to help people who weren't really ready yet to sit in front of a therapist, but they needed some of the information. And so I created Mindfully Me last year, and it's a card deck. Now people look at cards and they automatically think, oh, it's a game, you know, it's a card game. You could use it as a card game, but mine are basically more informational and also motivational. The cards have on it everything from affirmations to start speaking over yourself to supplements to take if you're dealing with anxiety, depression. It breaks down the science of the ANS, the autonomic nervous system, and the parasympathetic and sympathetic. So they get an understanding of actually what's going on physiologically with their body when they're depressed or anxious and have or have PTSD. And then also the cards have, because of my Christian background, I have a little bit of scripture written on there to kind of help people stand on something. If they don't necessarily want an affirmation, they can stand on scripture. And then I also have stretching and exercise techniques in there to kind of help you if you're struggling with breathing, if you're struggling with, you know, getting up and getting moving, or just like you say, having what we talked a little bit about somatization. So like pain in the body from mental anguish, mental health issues. So yeah. And
I
you can go
love
to
it.
drtori.org to get And that's my website where you can get information about what I'm doing, how my calendar looks if you want to book or if you want to buy the cards.
I want you all to get the price. Listen, just so happened, if any of you are counseling students, when you talked about it being used as a for a game, I think that would be perfect for counseling students.
Yeah.
Like y'all could use that. You find a student that's with you and you all can use that to quiz each other. The way I've encouraged my clients when I've told them to check it out is to just keep them on your nightstand and just take
Yes.
one and read it just to see what it's saying for that particular day. Is it an action? Is it just an affirmation? Is it something? Because you know we are faith-based, so I believe whatever you draw,
Yes.
you can believe that that's kind of what God
Yes.
wanted you to kind of
Yeah.
lean in. So I think
Yeah.
that's a great way to use it. You know, again, we are mind, body, and spirit, and anything you want to grow, you want to be intentional about it,
Yeah.
including your mental health.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, sister, for being with me.
It was a pleasure. I always love our conversations.
I love you, girl. We keep it so
Love
real.
you
And you know
too.
they're going to want to know how to get in touch with you. So going to drtori.org is the best way.
.org.
Yep, is the best way.
drtore.org. Or you can go to IG and catch me at DRTORE8. And then I also have a new series right now on my YouTube, which is Dr. Tori Prothero Wiley. You can go to YouTube and see my
I
series.
love it. And so you'll see her information and how to spell her name and all of that wherever you're watching this podcast. Thank you all so much for being with us. I'll see you later, friend.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, friend, listen, I'm super excited that you listened to this episode of Intentional Conversations with Robin May and Friends. But before you go, did you know that my book, Before You Take His Name, is officially available for you to purchase? Just head over to robinmayonline.com/shopbooks. robinmayonline.com/shopbooks. Before You Take His Name gives Christian women 14 questions that you should ask before you say I do. But here's the thing. The book is actually best for those who may be casually dating a girl, even if you're not dating at all. This is the time to read the book because it will allow you to set a healthy foundation when you start to get serious about somebody that just may be the one. So if you haven't already, head over to robinmayonline.com/shopbooks. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, it's right in the description of this video. If you're watching this on your favorite podcast app, you can find it in the show notes. Or if you're following me on Instagram, you can head over to Robin May Online and click the link in my bio. Listen, girl, if you're married, will you go ahead and order it for one of your single girlfriends? Tell them I told you to send it to them. Again, Before You Take His Name is available for purchase. Go grab your copy.